The Internet of Things has lots of promise. Program managers and researchers of all types can get a clear view of what's going on in their world when they can process information from unlimited numbers of data gathering points. But the expansion of network traffic and data from the Internet of Things also carries serious new cybersecurity threats. Chris Eng is the Vice President of Research at Veracode. He studied the security implications, and he joins me now. Mr. Eng, great to have you on.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
All right. So what are the cybersecurity implications of the Internet of Things as agencies and large organizations deploy sensors of all types in large numbers?
Sure. The implications of Internet of Things, or we'll call it IoT or even connected devices, is that there are so many of them. Everything is becoming connected these days. So whether it is home automation devices, you know, your connected thermostat or your garage door, to healthcare devices that you may use, or your cars being increasingly connected to the internet. Everything is becoming more and more connected. And with Internet of Things, there's this natural interaction with the physical world. So we start to use these devices for convenience, and we don't necessarily think about the safety and the privacy security implications of that. So from an enterprise, from a business perspective, it's something that will creep up on CIOs and CISOs before they know it. If you think about how mobile devices kind of work their way into the enterprise, you know, suddenly smartphones, you know, they weren't there one day and they were there the next, and businesses were scrambling to understand what the security implications of those were. So just understanding what's there, how it's all connected, and how that impacts the security and safety of employees and data and customers is going to be a complex challenge.
And I know a lot of things concerning the SCADA systems are of interest to government and industry. You know, the industrial control systems, those seem to be coming more into this Internet of Things constellation, I guess, if you will. And so are there any particular challenges for those which are the physical world connected to the cyber world?
Absolutely. I mean, when you take old systems from decades ago that were designed never to be connected to the internet, right? And then you start plugging them in and you give them interfaces that allow, let's say, people to control them over the web with a web browser. You're connecting the old and the new there. And you're going to make all the same mistakes there that you make setting up, say, a banking website or a retail website, in terms of what allows businesses to be hacked. You look at all the breaches that are happening these days with credit cards and sensitive data, OPM, things like that. You make all those same mistakes in connecting legacy SCADA systems to the internet, except now you're not going after credit cards. You are controlling power generation or centrifuges or water treatment plants and things that are part of the core critical infrastructure. So it's as we start connecting everything in a very hasty manner, if we don't take security into account, then those systems are going to be just as hackable as the systems that are being breached today, and with much more dire consequences. Right? If you think about a water treatment plant, for example, that's going to impact a lot of people in a real serious way. That's why those particular types of systems, industrial control, are getting a lot of attention these days, just that physical world connection.
And in your recent webinar that you held online, there was discussion of the software supply chain, and that's of great interest to large organizations that buy software, use software, especially use online software or software they just buy or might be embedded in other systems. So how does the software supply chain figure into all of this IoT a cyber concern?
Software supply chain is a term that's getting a lot of play these days. And really what it boils down to is the fact that we don't actually build software. We don't write software in the sense that you might think we do. If I go and build a new product today, I'm not going to code that up completely from scratch and, you know, start with nothing and then work my way towards 100% of a product. What we actually do is we assemble software. We borrow components from various open source and commercial sources to do some of the things that are common practice. So we don't reinvent the wheel every time. So every time we want to connect to something, you know, using encryption, for example, we'll use a programming library for that, so we don't have to implement the ciphers ourselves. Someone's already done that. If we want to do a certain type of, you know, encoding on disk or something, we'll use a library for that. And what happens is most pieces of software that are built today are 80 to 90% assembled from somebody else's code. And that's great. That's very convenient for developers. It allows us to innovate faster. It allows us to get products to market faster. But what it also does is it causes us to inherit the risk of those libraries as well. So if there are vulnerabilities in those libraries that can be attacked, and I build a product with one of those libraries, then now suddenly my product can be attacked in that same way. This is especially prevalent in the Internet of Things. If you think about the types of resources behind these devices, they're low cost, they're developed quickly by small teams, and so there's a lot of this assembly, this borrowing of software that happens. Some of the IoT devices, especially consumer devices, you'll find on Kickstarter, you know, selling for $50. They're teams of three people, and you know they're just trying to get the product to market. And security may be, you know, a complete, you know, second thought. And even the companies that are producing consumer devices or IoT devices don't necessarily have huge staffs behind this. And they're once they finish a product, they're on their way to the next one, which is going to ship in, you know, 6 months. So you're inheriting all these risks, and that's going to make your product attackable. On top of that, a lot of the products are not updatable. So when we ship something, and then 2 months later, we find out about a significant vulnerability that can be attacked. You may have heard of Heartbleed. That's one very
sure.
prominent example that happened last year. A new vulnerability comes out. If my IoT device is not patchable, then all of my customers that are using that are going to be exposed to that vulnerability in perpetuity. And so that's where supply chain really starts to affect this ecosystem. If you don't make things patchable, if you're not aware of what's going on, the risk that you're inheriting, then that's going to create problems down the line.
We're speaking with Chris Eng. He's Vice President of Research at Veracode. And a lot of agencies, I'm thinking, say, for example, of the Energy Department, and I guess a lot of corporations are doing this kind of thing. They are trying to deploy consumer-grade or looking for ways to deploy consumer-grade sensors that can sniff air and water and so forth, and these are things people can buy now, and use them to do large-scale data gathering across the United States, really. And so as those devices come on, it seems like there's another new opportunity for hacking or for discovering vulnerabilities in these devices, which are cheap and will be deployed by the thousands or millions. So how does it,
Absolutely.
What's a good way to look at that and think about that in terms of cybersecurity?
Yeah, whether it's inside a business or it's a sort of a smart city or anything like that, you're going to have connected devices, and it may not be something with an interface, right? It may be a sensor that's paying attention to an assembly line, for example, or it's something in a smart city that's aware of, it's watching traffic, so it can kind of understand what to do with lights and so on. These are going to become ubiquitous. And, you know, the real challenge there is managing all that. Again, going back to the patching thing, whenever there's a vulnerability, if we can't update these things in a timely way, they're going to be subject to attack. It's a very difficult problem. We have to understand how to manage these with the efficiency that we might manage a typical enterprise. Even with the enterprise, you think about, you don't think about a typical office having a lot of sensors and Internet of Things devices, right? We're just in our cubicles using our computers. But think about the conference room TVs. Almost all TVs these days are smart TVs. They're connected. Think about the Internet-enabled video cameras you're using for video conferencing. All these things are technically IoT devices. And it's just the scale at which these devices are being deployed with an enterprise or, again, within manufacturing facilities or within cities, that makes it such a challenge. A lot of these are not designed with security in mind. They're kind of rushed out to the market, again, to for that quick innovation. And so what we're seeing is that all the same old software flaws that we were aware of back in the 90s, and you know, we've learned to fix for the most part in enterprise software, we're seeing crop up again in these types of devices. People are making 20-year-old mistakes. They're not building security into every phase of the development process. And so we're seeing mistakes like, you know, things without passwords or default passwords that are well known that you can't ever change. I just watched a talk at a security conference about infusion pumps and that are used by hospitals, and you would just be completely amazed by the lack of security in some of these devices. So it's almost like we're going back to, you know, the late 90s in terms of security maturity, and we're having to learn this all over again and re-educate all these manufacturers all over again.
So yeah, the password to a pacemaker is ventricle or something. And so whose responsibility is this in large organizations? Is this something that should go up to the CIO level or the chief information security officer? I mean, who should be looking at this and thinking about this, and what should they think about?
Certainly, the CIO is going to be responsible for any piece of technology that comes into the organization, and that's going to require some tight coordination with the CISO in terms of accountability. What we see happening in large enterprises at Veracode, when we work with companies, is that we're starting to see them focus on just vendor supply chain, so not just within an individual piece of software, like where is that, how is that software being assembled, but for all the companies that I'm doing business with, the companies that I'm buying software from or that I'm deploying their software, as an enterprise, I'm asking them to show me some sort of evidence that they're doing security testing and that they're doing it well. Enterprises are asking those vendors to commit to timelines around fixing vulnerabilities that are found during the testing process. And so that's helping raise the bar in terms of, you know, the accountability for that. So it's not just, does this software do have the functionality that I want it to have, but also, are you going to commit to a certain level of due diligence around the security of that? And so we're seeing that more and more commonly as a way to get software vendors kind of to raise the bar, I guess, for that playing field.
All right, lots to think about. Chris Heng is the Vice President of Research at Veracode. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.